Historian Doris Kearns Goodwin has had a Pulitzer Prize-winning career writing about presidents. Her two most recent, Team of Rivals, about Abraham Lincoln, and The Bully Pulpit, Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, and the Golden Age of Journalism. It chronicles the friendship between Taft and Roosevelt and their relationship with journalists. In advance of her appearance here May 6 for the St. Louis Speakers Series, Kearns Goodwin spoke with our Amanda Huntingfort. They discussed political parallels between the Roosevelt-Taft era and today. Amanda asked specifically about Roosevelt's unique relationship with journalists working for McClure's magazine.
It really, when you look at it from today's perspective, was quite astonishing because these journalists at this one magazine are now some of the most legendary journalists in the history of journalism. Ida Tarbell, who wrote about Standard Oil, Ray Baker about the abuses of the railroads, Lincoln Steffens about corruption in the city, and William Allen White about political bosses, all working for this crazy, fabulous McClure. And Teddy Roosevelt understood that in order to get legislation passed to deal with some of the problems of the industrial era, when he had an old guard Republican majority in the Congress, he had to mobilize public sentiment to force the Congress from the outside in, and that's what these journalists did. So they really formed a partnership where he respected them, they respected him, they could criticize one another, and together they created the progressive movement at the turn of the 20th century.
Do you think they ever felt like Roosevelt was using them, or was it truly a partnership?
I honestly do believe it was truly a partnership, because when you read the letters and the memoirs of the journalists, they felt totally free if they needed to argue with him, to criticize him. And that was the key. He accepted that if they were to keep their integrity, that they had to feel able, if they needed to criticize him. And so they did. I mean, Lincoln Steffens was much to the left of where Teddy Roosevelt was. So eventually was Ray Baker, who ended up working for Woodrow Wilson, the Democratic nominee. But during the time of their partnership, they knew and he knew that together they could get the country to care about the problems of exploitation of women and children, of monopolies that were swallowing up small businesses, of meatpacking plants and food and drugs that were flooding the market. And so I think in a certain sense, they both benefited from the other. The key to it was, at one point, one of the journalists wrote a critical review of Roosevelt's memoir of the Spanish-American War experience with the Rough Riders, and he said that Roosevelt placed himself so much in the center of action, he should have called the book Alone in Cuba. And everybody laughed at this review, but instead of getting mad, Roosevelt wrote back and said, "I regret to tell you my wife and entire family loved your review of my book. Now I have to meet you. I've long wanted to know you." So it's that you need if this is going to work.
Do you see any parallels between what the journalists were reporting on then and what journalists who are covering our political climate are reporting on now?
Well, what does seem a parallel is that the main concern at the turn of the 20th century was that in the wake of the Industrial Revolution, a huge gap had arisen between the rich and the poor. Before the Industrial Revolution, most people were living on farms. You know, the richest person might have had a house on a hill that was bigger than anybody else's. But now suddenly, at the turn of the 20th century, you have millionaires, Carnegie and Vanderbilt and Rockefeller, and people struggling in factories and immigrants in the tenements. And so the progressive movement was an attempt to soften some of those aspects of the industrial era. Now, in our time, we've had the technological revolution, and we have billionaires, you know, living in these huge estates with global money, and the struggling middle class still trying to make itself get through the days. But what is absent today is that investigative reporting. We still have people doing it. But what happened in McClure's time was he gave those reporters 2 years to research their stories. They would then write 10,000-word pieces every month. People would gobble them up and talk about them. It became part of the common conversation. Today, even if you had these kinds of investigative reports, our attention is so fragmented, and even the journalists themselves have to spend time worrying about Facebook and blogs and Twitter. And I don't know whether we have, and breaking news comes in every 2 seconds. whether we have that sustained attention that they had to deal with the problems of the time as they did at the turn of the 20th century.
Do you think we have any chance of getting back to a situation like that, or do you think it was just an age that's completely gone?
I don't know. I guess I have to hope that we do. I mean, I think, you know, when young people enter journalism, there's still a great idealism about hoping that they've entered a profession where they can help to make things better for the country. Just the problem is, I think, where everything is so transparent today that if the journalists formed a friendship as they did with Roosevelt, it might be looked upon today, as your very first question rightly asked, was he using them? It might be looked on askance from both sides. But at that time, it was closer to a time in the 19th century when all the newspapers were partisan. So in those days, it was really different. I mean, you just wrote for one party or the other as a journalist. Then the 20th century produced the first mass market newspapers, and they began to be objective. And now there's always got to be an adversarial relationship between the press and the president's healthy in a democracy. But it's reached a point right now that I think that journalists might be afraid to get too close for fear that they'd be looked upon by their fellow journalists as doing something untoward. But maybe we need to have, you know, that ability for them to talk to each other, at least in a more open way, so that both sides could explain to the public what's going on, as they did in Roosevelt's time.
Do you think, then, that if Roosevelt were president today, he would be looked on very differently?
You know, I'd like to believe that one of the things that made Roosevelt so effective as a president was that he understood that even at a complicated time, as the turn of the 20th century, when they're talking about what they called trusts then, or monopolies, that he had to explain it in very simple terms to the American people. He said that sometimes when he talked, his Harvard buddies would say he was talking in too folksy a language, too homely a language. But he understood phrases, the square deal, which perfectly suited that time. People felt a sense of fairness, and they wanted to feel that that was what they were doing in the country. He had speak softly and carry a big stick. He even gave Maxwell House the slogan, good to the very last drop. And he was a genius at going around the country on a train trip for 6 weeks in the spring and the fall, stopping at village stations and really keeping in touch with the people. And I guess I'd like to believe that that still would be possible today, and that if you have that kind of ability to really emotionally reach the public, you can move them. And maybe if you move them, they can move this dysfunctional Congress we have, which seems unable to get anything done.
Do you see lessons for our leaders today in the way that Roosevelt worked?
Oh, I absolutely do. I mean, I think underneath all of the books that I've ever written about FDR or Lincoln or Teddy Roosevelt is that there are certain universal qualities of leadership that are relevant today or yesterday for public or private leadership. You know, acknowledging errors and learning from your mistakes, getting through adversity, communicating with your public, being able to share blame when something goes wrong, staying close to the people, getting outside of Washington. All of these things, I think, are traits of human nature that our best presidents have shared. So, yes, I do think if you study, this is what I have to believe as an historian, that studying the lives of the people who lived before us, we can learn from their struggles and triumphs. And that's what my whole life has been about, hopefully, in looking at all these great characters from Lincoln and LBJ to FDR and now Teddy and Taft.
Then how do you think that Theodore Roosevelt would have handled our political climate today and sort of the issues that are facing our president today?
Well, it's interesting, you know. I mean, he had a real fighting spirit. So, you know, I think sometimes he would really get out, you know, and talk about what was wrong about the monopolies. But he also understood that in our country, it was better to say, as he did, that he wasn't against the rich simply because they were rich, only if they accumulated their wealth by unfair means. He wasn't against the poor if they were poor, but only if they didn't use the opportunities they were given. He was for the capitalist and the wage worker. And I think that sense of a square deal was exactly where we would still find a certain kind of trade today that would work.
Theodore Roosevelt is by far not the only president that you have studied. Of the presidents you've looked at, do you have a favorite?
I suppose it's Lincoln. I mean, there's nothing about Lincoln that you can't feel when you live with him for the period of time that I did, over 10 years, that if you could only be more like him, somehow you'd be a better person. I mean, he was just able, unlike anybody else I've ever studied, if somebody hurt him in the past, he was able to put that past hurt behind instead of feeling jealousy toward people in the present. It's not that he didn't feel it, but he would say, if you allow these feelings to fester, they poison a part of you. And whenever he made a mistake, he would write down what happened so that he wouldn't make the same mistake the second time. He once said, I'd like to believe I'm smarter today than I was yesterday because of what I learned yesterday. So I really felt there was something about his integrity and his honesty and just his ethical side that if only one could be more like him. When he was sad, humor was what, as he said, whistled off his sadness. So there was a sense in which he had real difficulties in his life, but somehow kept persevering despite loss after loss and became perhaps our greatest president. So it was a great treat. And then I was able to live with him again after the book was finished through the movie Lincoln that Spielberg did. So he was in my life for lots of years through Daniel Day-Lewis after I was finished with my book.
I've heard that Steven Spielberg has bought the rights to produce The Bully Pulpit. Any developments with that or any future books that you've started?
Well, I mean, I'm so happy about the idea that I'll have a chance, hopefully, to work with Spielberg again, because working with him on Lincoln was such a great adventure. You know, when you're writing, you're sort of writing alone, but when you're part of making a movie, it's a whole comradeship and a sense of camaraderie. So from the days when I first started taking Daniel Day-Lewis to Illinois, when he first agreed to be Lincoln, and I spent a couple days with him showing him the Lincoln site, to working with Tony Kushner, to going to Richmond when the filming was being done, to all the awards ceremony, it was just a great adventure. And it's fun to think of starting it all over again with Teddy and Taft. And I think what I'm going to do next is to just bring all my guys into the room at the same time and write about leadership and talk about what are the traits that they shared, which I think span time and even cultures, and what are the universal attributes of leadership that I saw in FDR or Lincoln or Teddy or Taft or LBJ when he was at the height of his domestic power.
That sounds like a very interesting read. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this.
Doris Kearns Goodwin speaking with our Amanda Huntingfort. Kearns Goodwin will be here May 6th for the St. Louis Speakers Series. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with University of Missouri System President Tim Wolf. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.